Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent.
Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Tawny Alvarez, and today our guest is James Klusky, former professional tennis player turned executive coach and founder of GiveLearn. And today we're talking about embracing pressure. I mean, pressure is something that we all experience, both at work and at home, but getting to a point where you're not only able to appropriately manage pressure, but also to embrace it is key to high performing in your personal and professional life. And I'm really excited that we have James here today to kind of talk about different ways in which individuals can manage, and not just manage, but also embrace that pressure. So welcome, James. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you. Delighted to be here.
One of the things that I love to do for our audience is oftentimes when they're listening, they're saying, Tawny, why did you choose James to have the discussion on this topic? What is it about him and his life experiences that led you to believe that he would be somebody who had wisdom to impart to the masses about this topic generally? So I would love it if you could give our listeners a little bit of background about yourself and how you become the founder of GiveLearn.
Yes, no problem. So my background is a little bit different, actually. So I was a professional tennis player and was ranked 145 in the world in tennis. I grew up in Dublin, Ireland, and was one of the best kind of juniors in Ireland, and then went on a sports scholarship to the US. So I played college tennis at Louisiana State University, at LSU. We were ranked top 10 in the country in team, and then I was also ranked number 3 in the nation as well in doubles. So kind of grew up in a background of high performance sport, and then when I finished at LSU, I went on the tour, and as I said at the start, I got to 145 in the world, won 15 professional doubles titles, and was lucky enough to kind of travel the world for a number of years playing and play Davis Cup for Ireland for close to 10 years as well. And then in a post, post sporting career life, as I said, I think my life has really been in high performance, but in a post sporting career life, I worked with an executive coach who really helped me kind of shape my journey of where I was going. And with that executive coach, I kind of kept coming back to my passion is around people and performance and, you know, being the best version of yourself and all those types of things. And then, you know, little bits along the way, and I ended up starting GiveLearn and developing out this learning platform, which is all around, you know, soft skills development, which includes topics such as handling pressure and so on. So hope that gives kind of a flavor of me, and then look forward to, I suppose, getting more into the nuts and bolts of it.
Absolutely. And it's interesting because I feel like in business, we use sports metaphors a lot, but there's a reason for it. It's because there's aspects of both team and individual sports that have comparators as to how we conduct business, how we deal under pressure. Tell our listeners a little bit more about GiveLearn and how some of the concepts from being a professional tennis player played a role in your development for GiveLearn and kind of why it's different from some other educational platforms that might be out there right now.
Yeah, so I think to give context of what GiveLearn is, so GiveLearn is an online learning solution for companies across different industries. And so we run a full calendar from January to December of live classes all around the area of human skill development. So our classes are, you know, around leadership, communications, presentations, handling pressure, which is obviously what we're speaking about a little bit. And so all those types of areas. What's a little bit different from us to other providers is, one is our classes are live, so you join users from around the world, from companies like Builder AI, which is a unicorn business, very successful, right to, accounting firms, legal firms, and so on. So you join live classes. Secondly to that is I've always been really passionate about building a company that's for profit, but also for purpose as well. So what we do is we link learning to ESG, or link learning to doing good in the world for companies. So when you attend our classes, you earn points, and you can use those points to donate to different social causes. So that kind of makes us a little bit different as well.
For individuals who are just joining us, you're listening to the HR Power Hour, and I'm your host, Tani Alvarez. And today, our guest is James Klusky, former professional tennis player turned executive coach and founder of GiveLearn. And today, we're talking about embracing pressure. So, James, prior to founding GiveLearn, you also served as a private tennis coach to Sir Richard Branson. Can you tell our listeners a little bit more about that experience?
Yeah, so I mean, I think I always, when I talk about that, I always say, I'm sure there's someone listening to this now and they want to pick up the phone and call someone and they're a bit maybe apprehensive about it. But when I think about, the power of one phone call in terms of my career and my journey, so to give context, I played an ATP tennis event in Sweden. I was at the players' party. Couple of players were talking about this thing called the Necker Cup, which is Richard Branson's tennis event on his island. He's a big tennis fan, where some of the most successful business people in the world come to Necker along with some of the best tennis players in the world. Now, I said at the outset that I was 145 in the world in tennis. I wasn't number one in the world, but I picked up the phone and I had a loose connection. I knew someone that knew someone that was involved in the event, and I essentially. It was a little bit of a lukewarm call where I said, look, I'd love to come out to Necker and I'll hit with the business people and I'll do whatever you need, essentially. And my philosophy was, all he can do is say no, right? So that was 2015. I went out to Necker and I mean, incredibly nervous about this whole experience about meeting all these different people. And, Richard was an inspiration of mine and obviously still is. And then when I was on Necker at the first time in 2015, I met Richard there and I met one of the people on the island who essentially runs the island. I'm fast forwarding the story a little bit, but I got an email about a couple of weeks later saying, would I come back out and would I coach Richard tennis for a month? So I've done that since 2015 and I continued to do that. So I was there, very luckily, I was there about 2 weeks ago for the Necker Cup for the tennis event. It's been an incredible experience working with him and coaching him and learning from him and being able to sit with him one to one and pick his brains and understand more around what makes him tick. And I think I've been really lucky to learn lots of different things from him, by way of the conversation in terms of pressure. I think, the thing I really picked up from him is how positive he is, how glass half full he is. He's, get up and go, try things, give it a go, work hard, look after yourself, all those types of things really stand out. But the bottom line is, and I don't mean to sound funny or anything, but he's just a very nice person. He's very helpful. He's very engaging. One of the things he has said publicly is around the topic of listening and being a good listener. And I find when I sit with him, he asks a lot of questions. So he's always looking to understand, whether it be about the economy in Ireland or the UK or news or different things. So that's something that stands out is ask a lot of questions.
It's so interesting. I find you fascinating, kind of more generally, and I'm sure we could spend probably a whole episode just kind of on your background and kind of how you get to founding GiveLearn. But one of the interesting parts about your background that I think our listeners are going to find even more telling as it weaves into your story is the time that you spent in recruitment. So I'd love for you to share a little bit about some of the key elements that you learned working in recruitment. And then I think it makes sense for us to take all these different pieces of your life experience and talk about how it plays a role in this topic of managing and embracing pressure more generally.
Yeah, I think the recruitment piece is an interesting part of the story in terms of when I worked with that executive coach, what we looked at was like, what are you passionate about? And people and performance and getting the best out of people. When I meet people, I always think, oh, you should meet this person. I love connecting people. So, prior to founding GiveLearn, as you said, I went into recruitment I was in recruitment probably for about a year and a half in a company in Ireland. And I enjoyed the experience. I enjoyed the ex It was my first experience of I suppose working in a business. And I thought I would actually enjoy it more in terms of, well, hey, I like people, I like connecting people. I love this, but I probably didn't enjoy it as much as I do enjoy what I'm doing now. In terms of, I suppose, in terms of lessons learned from recruitment, I think a big thing is that people are people. You can have all the tech in the world, you can have all the algorithms in the world, but at the end of the day, if someone gets offered a job, they're going to go home and speak to their significant other or another person in their support system. And those are dynamics that add different things in there, and then I also think in terms of, our conversation around pressure, I think recruitment is a very, it's a highly stressful industry in terms of people trying to fill jobs and leads and all those types of things. So I think in terms of my experience, I think it was good for me to work in an office, and kind of learn that dynamic a little bit more. And I think it's definitely helped me in terms of my transition from professional sport into working in a business to having my own business.
It's interesting because when we're talking about recruitment, I mean, we talk about it from a lot of different perspectives, both from this perspective of the recruiters, the company, and specifically from the applicant or possible employee. And we know kind of more generally statistically that when we look at key elements or times in which stress is at its highest in a person's life, job changes, moves from one location to another, marriage, divorce, or separation, these are the birth of a child or addition to a family. These are very high stress moments. And it's tough because when we're looking at it from the realm of recruitment or starting a new job, we're simultaneously adding in authenticity. Make sure that you're authentic. Make sure that you're bringing your whole self into the work environment. But to do that in such a high pressure position where you're trying to determine, like, gosh, I don't have a job now and I do need a job. And am I presenting appropriately? In your experience, how does kind of the management of pressure play a role as it relates to maybe making a transition like that into a new position?
Yeah, I think it's a great question, and we could talk about this for hours as well. I think the piece around someone's CV and so on, and how everyone has a great CV, right? Everyone can do a job. I think actually in terms of interviewing and dealing with pressure and so on, I think we had a networking program on our platform, and the lecturer referenced a book by a guy called Harvey Coleman, which was, it's called The Pie Theory. And it was that 10% of your career success comes from your core performance. And then the I and the E, the other two big things were image and exposure, which was incredible when you think only 10% of your career success comes from your performance, according to the Pie Theory from Harvey Coleman. So I think the things that make a difference actually are those kind of, human skills in terms of our communications, our presentations, our leadership, all those kind of areas. Now, secondly to that, we all know people that we grew up with, maybe who, they don't do well in exams, for example, when they're younger, right? So how can you get better at that? How can you improve at that? I think there's little things you can do. I think there's, you can practice, you can do mock interviews or interviews with maybe your recruiter that's helping you and so on, or with a spouse or someone else. And then I think of what works for you. So like even last week we had a session on GiveLearn, which was on breath work. And doing something like breathing or meditation before you go in to do an interview. I think things like breath work have become much more prevalent in high performance sport, right? How do you get into that state? How do you be calm and embrace that environment? I think those are little things that, it's unique to you, but things you have to think about. And then finally, I'd say, when we feel pressure, whether it's in a job interview, as we're using this example, or moving jobs or something like that, I think we tend to speed up and we tend to make rash decisions and rush decisions, as opposed to taking a step back and being calm and thinking about our decision and making sure that, if it's a job, that it's the right culture fit for you and so on. So, I think there's lots of different variables that go into that kind of question around changing jobs and so on. But I think again, it kind of comes back to dealing with that pressure and being calm taking all the information you have and making an effective decision is really important.
No, I think there is so much that goes into it, and I think you've given some really concrete ways in which individuals kind of who are going through that process are in a better position to maybe manage it so that you can look at the image and exposure as opposed to what that CV includes. So I think that's really helpful. It is time, however, for us to take a quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
As the list of compliance challenges for businesses continues to grow, it's time to think about your payroll vendor as someone that can do more than just pay your employees. I'm Chris Clef, president of Paper Trails. We're a team of fun and local experts purveying convenient, high-tech payroll and compliance services across New England. Whether your business is struggling to stay compliant with an earned paid leave law, you're worrying about retirement savings programs, or you have questions about your state's paid family medical leave, Paper Trails has the team and tools necessary to allow you to handle the work while we handle the paperwork. To learn more about Paper Trails and how we can help your business, visit papertrails.com/HR Power.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-law.com. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez from Verrill, and today our guest is James Klusky, former professional tennis player turned executive coach and founder of GiveLearn. And today we're talking about embracing pressure. Prior to the break, we were talking about, the process of entering an organization, recruitment, and the backstory as to how James gets to be in this position that he is now as founder of GiveLearn, and the moments in his life where he has been faced with a high-pressure situation and ways in which that can be managed. James, you and I have spoken before, and when we've talked about pressure, you noted that a person cannot embrace pressure alone. What do you mean when you say that they can't embrace pressure alone?
I think coming from an individual sport like tennis, now obviously I played at LSU, which was a team, but then when you move into professional ranks and it's much more of an individual sport. If you watch Serena Williams or you watch Novak Djokovic on center court at Wimbledon, they look up to their box, right? And they look up to their coach and their nutritionist and their support system there. And I think for me, I think in terms of developing through your career, professional and personally, I think it's very difficult to go it alone. I think you need that ecosystem or that support system of people that will, challenge you, encourage you, help you, stretch you, all those types of things. I think, I think that needs to be kind of a diverse group of people as well, because I think sometimes, we like having people around us who tell us we're great and everything is rosy, when we need people that, yes, give us positive reinforcement, but also, challenge and encourage us. And for me, it's around finding that support structure, and those people that can challenge you. And if I can just share one story. So when I was on the way up in terms of my ranking, I was training in Ireland, and I was, kind of a big fish in a small pond in terms of I was the best player. There wasn't probably as many people to train with over there. And then a friend of mine who was around the same ranking as me said, he asked me, did I want to come to India to train with some of the best doubles players in the world? So I went to India for a couple of Christmases, and I trained with Mahesh Bhupathi and Sanya Mirza and very famous doubles players in India. And it wasn't necessarily that they hit the ball any differently to me. And I'm not trying to get technical in terms of tennis, or they did anything radically different to me. But there's a piece around the kind of that community of people who are high achievers, who are, challenging each other, working hard, encouraging each other, and so on. So, I think who can you add to your ecosystem, or who are the mentors and coaches and so on, that you can, that, or communities that you can get involved with that will help you achieve your personal and professional goals?
It's interesting, because when we think about pressure, I think a lot of people see it as something that you have to go alone, because it's based off of an individualized fear, anxiety, or a belief that while this seems like a high pressure situation for me, for other people, it wouldn't feel that way, or other people's experiences are so dissimilar that they would never understand kind of what I'm experiencing. But you make, some really good points about the fact that, having a community of people around you to look to for support, and maybe they haven't experienced the exact same pressure situation, but that they're able to provide support kind of as you're moving through that process. And when we think about that community, and you've kind of mentioned in passing a little bit, even with that story, who are some people that you would recommend as somebody in business, right? If you were to have a community that was going to help you handle pressure, who are some of those people in the community going to be? And when I say people, I don't mean like, well, Bob's a really great person, but if you were going to kind of put a hat on that person and say, okay, this hat, you're playing this role in my life, what are those roles looking like?
Yeah, I think a couple of things. I think the first one, an executive coach is a great person to have. I mean, I mentioned at the start of my story in terms of when I finished playing professionally, how I worked with an executive coach, and I still work with the same guy. Stephen is his name, and he's incredibly incredibly supportive. And I think it's really good to have that person that you can go to, and especially just that person that you can go to and share and in a confidential manner, that can again encourage you and so on. So that executive coach is number one for me. Number two would be potentially a mentor, or a mentor is probably, if in your organization, is there a mentor? And a mentor for me is someone that's achieved a level of success in your industry, so say they had, maybe they had, you're building an accounting practice, or you work in accounting as an accountant, but you have a mentor who's maybe coming to the end of their career but has built a mentoring practice or something along those lines. So I think having someone that's kind of been there, done that, that can help guide you as well in terms of where you're going. And then you mentioned three, so I'm going to kind of touch on two more. So one is a sponsor. So there's a great TED Talk, Carla Harris, who's if you put her name into YouTube, a great TED Talk will come up. She was a president of, I think, JP Morgan, And she said, in your career, you need a sponsor. And a sponsor, the way she defines it, is she says that, look, the most important decisions in your career are made when you're not in the room. So having someone, a sponsor that will vouch for you when you're not in the room is really important. And then the fourth one, I think, is that community, whether it's you know, your local chamber of commerce, or you know, your local business community, or, you know, I know there's lots of different in different countries there are different kind of terms for them, but I think that maybe community that you can relate to and talk to and so on.
So you mentioned both mentor and sponsor, and kind of they do have different roles, but what are your thoughts on ways in which somebody can identify a sponsor? How does that work? I mean, I feel like we're seeing more and more, unfortunately, individuals who hear, gosh, okay, to be successful, I need a sponsor. And they look at it almost like a checklist. And then they go to a person, they're like, will you be my sponsor? And I feel like in a lot of ways that misses the mark, right, about what we're doing and how sponsorship kind of works. Do you have thoughts on ways in which people can, I don't want to say create, but help to build that sponsorship relationship that I do think is necessary for individuals in business?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think it's a really interesting question. I mean, I think if I go back to the pie theory and, you know, 10% performance and then the I and the E in terms of image and exposure, and the image pieces, you know, what do people say about you when you're not in the room? And then the exposure piece is who's seen you in action, who's seen you at an event with a client and so on, right? So I think in terms of the sponsor thing, I think your first part of your question is really interesting around just going up to someone, say, within your organization saying, hey, will you be my sponsor, right? I think you need to build a relationship with someone over time. And I think these relationships need to be reciprocal as well. So, you know, I think you need to be giving them value as well in terms of in terms of different things. So, you know, in terms of mentorship, I think a mentor gets value out of the relationship in terms of supporting someone maybe more junior than them. And the sponsor, it's probably a little bit more gray around, but what do they get out of it? And I don't mean to sound bad in saying what do they get out of it, but I think the big thing for me on that piece is that it's a relationship that's built on trust, and it's built over time, and you have done what you've said you're going to do, whether it be in a work environment, so that trust is there, so they can again kind of vouch for you. But I do think if you're working in a bigger organization, you do have to kind of identify these people that can help give you that helping hand in terms of that support.
No, absolutely. And I mean, the thing is it is tough. And I think if it was easy to figure out how to identify those individuals or how to garner those relationships, that it wouldn't be as important as it is kind of ultimately as we talk about high achieving and pressure. One of the other elements that you mentioned was based off of community. And when you say community, are you referencing the business at large, or are you kind of focusing on something maybe outside of the entity itself when you talk about the importance of community?
Yeah, I personally believe it's very powerful to have people from outside of your core company in terms of that piece. And, you know, on GiveLearn, we have companies from different industry, again, whether it be legal, tech, accounting, and so on. And I think sometimes in certain industries, you know, people start in an industry and then they continue their career in that industry, and they probably don't think outside the box a little bit in that sense. And I think speaking to people from other industries and other walks of life, I think is really important. So, like, you know, on GiveLearn, we had a session on managing difficult conversations, and we had Dave Sammel, who's a very famous tennis coach, who talked about having difficult conversations with players and how they give feedback in those environments and so on. But actually relaying it back to a legal person who's having a tough conversation with maybe it's a direct report, for example, right? So what can you learn from from different industries. And secondly to that, there was a very interesting interview with Michael O'Leary, who's the CEO of Ryanair, which is one of the most successful airlines in the world. It's the biggest airline in Europe, a low fare airline. And he talked around hiring people who have never worked in the airline industry because they come into the industry and they think a little bit differently, or they think outside the box, and they say, well, why is it done like this? So I think for people in their core business, in terms of their own personal professional development, I think a community of people that maybe it is a little bit of a mix of industries and of people from different backgrounds to encourage and develop people.
It's interesting because I agree with that. And I think it's something that's oftentimes overlooked, or there's this perception that individuals in another industry or with different backgrounds maybe are going to not understand either what the company is attempting to do, where the company's at. But this creates some really interesting dialogue and dynamics in my mind from a diversity, equity, and inclusion perspective as well. Something that is really on the top of different individuals' minds, especially individuals in leadership. Because when we talk about some of those core concepts of inclusion, of diversity, while we might be focusing in on skin color, religion, background, gender, all of those different elements, there's also just the general background and how that integrates into helping an organization achieve whatever its mission or drive is. And kind of specifically, as an executive coach, I mean, what are some ways in which you communicate to people you're working with about the importance of thinking outside the box and ways in which they can either pause or change their frame of reference so that they do look at it differently?
Yeah, I think from a coaching perspective, I think asking good questions is the key and letting the person speak, but just probing them a little bit in terms of that. I think, in terms of diversity, equity, inclusion, again, I think it's fascinating what you talk about, and I think we tend to go to school with people like us, hang out with people like us. Marry people like us and create more of us, so like I think there's that element. And one of the people I met through Necker, actually a very successful business person, they asked me the question once was, well, James, who's on your internal boardroom? And I actually didn't really understand it at that time, but essentially for people listening, companies have their boards. But as an individual, who's on your board? Who are the people, the non-execs and the James Klusky Inc. But secondly to that, what this person said was, it's important to have a diverse board, and not just have people that, again, just tell you everything is great and you're great, that they challenge you and make you think a little bit differently. So I think back to your question, I think it's from a coach's standpoint, it's probably asking the questions and trying and encouraging people to think a little bit differently. But it's not easy either, so I don't want to sit here and say it's just an easy thing to do. But I do see a lot of value in it.
No, I mean, I've never heard that concept before, but it's right. It's spot on when you think about when you have an important decision you need to make, who's your board members? Who do you go to ask for thoughts, advice, counsel as to, where you go from wherever you're at. So I absolutely love that concept of internal board. With that, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
Educational HR Radio is critical to your organization's success, and our sponsors understand the value this program brings to owners, C-suite professionals, and the HR community. We are honored to thank our sponsors for their support and contributions to this program. We thank the law firms of Verrill, Jackson Lewis, and Sheehan Finney, along with our partners, Paper Trails and Strategic HR. Want to be the next sponsor of the HR Power Hour? Text 603-303-6124 and say HR Power Hour sponsor.
It's 6:42 p.m. Time for Steve Plato and his son Dylan to do the dishes. They talk about everything from the yuckiness of girls to the awesomeness of his soccer team. Sometimes they don't talk at all. Then,
hey!
The dreaded splash fight. It's dad o'clock, and it's the best time of the day. Because the smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez from Verrill, and today our guest is James Klusky, former professional tennis player turned executive coach and founder of GiveLearn. And today we're talking about embracing pressure. We spent the last segment talking a lot about ways in which we can create a community that supports us, that pressure isn't something that we have to individually bear, but that's something that we're going to work with a team, and that they're going to help guide us. And we ended the last segment talking about your boardroom and individuals you may go to in times of need. We've talked before, James, and one of the things that you mentioned was the idea of, as a high performer and achieving your goals to become a high performer, that in that role, once you, let's say we've achieved high performer status, it doesn't end there unless you're looking for burnout. Thoughts on ways in which people can guard against burnout as they work to embrace becoming a high performer and embracing that pressure?
Yeah, I think it's a really important topic, because I think sometimes, you know, I think sometimes success is success almost feels like it's out in front of us, right? If I get that promotion, then everything will be great, right? Or if I become a partner in the business, everything will become great. And the goalposts just kind of keep getting pushed forward, right? And I think a lot of people, if you look at the stats, obviously a lot of people struggle with burnout and overworked and pressure and all those types of things. So, you know, I think a big thing for me, and I think what's changed a lot, I think in business sense, is this idea of this, you know, kind of rest and recovery piece. So for me on that, you know, when I worked with Richard, as I said, I still work with Richard, but when I was with him last year, and I did a month with him. And one of the things that I really picked up was, here's a guy who is going on into space, has 300 companies, is like, and I don't quote me on that, I'm not sure how many there actually is now, but you know, he's just incredibly busy. But it's non-negotiable that in his diary every day he comes down and plays tennis at 6:30. And we have a cup of tea together, and then in the evening we'll play tennis as well. So what I took from that is, you know, sometimes I'd wake up in the morning and I think, oh my God, I have to get back to such and such on email, or I have to send a proposal to this person. When actually believing that by taking 30 minutes or 15 minutes to do breath work or 45 minutes to go for a walk or whatever your kind of drug of choice is, that actually taking that time to, you know, go for the walk, we'll use for his example, that you're actually going to be more productive in your work life, in your personal life, it's going to protect against that kind of burnout piece. I think finding, like, scheduling that rest and recovery, I think is really important, and guarding against it, I think is, or, you know, making sure that you don't get to that zone. Because I think there's a great quote from Billie Jean King, who's obviously a famous tennis player, who says, pressure is a privilege. So I think there's a fine line, and there's a side of thing that, look, we need pressure in our life. Pressure is a good thing. It's to embrace it, and it's to, in some ways, enjoy it. And But we don't want to stay in that pressure zone where we're feeling pressure, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So what are the things that help you kind of relieve that a little bit? And I think scheduling time around that is really, really important.
Yeah, I mean, and it's interesting because I think that there is a period of time in our past where people would make the joke, I'll sleep when I'm dead, or, I don't need a break. And I think we're seeing more and more that that's not a sustainable lifestyle for individuals, that really self-care, the rest and the recovery, and that once those breaks are either taken or built into someone's day, that they are higher functioning, that they're able to come in and think more clearly, they're able to accomplish more in less time, and that while rest and recovery may seem as though it's something that is unhelpful, it actually has kind of this much more broader implication for all the other things that an individual is doing, and not just in work. I mean, we've talked about athletics, we've talked about work, but there's all elements of a person's life that I think that rest and recovery kind of plays a role in.
Yeah, can I just add one thing on that? Because I think what you said is 100% right. And I think for me, the evolution in terms of professional sport is, and business is, it was, oh, I'm going to, work 24 hours a day. And I'm, we see all the kind of Rocky training montages and all that sort of stuff. And then in business, we have obviously all the different kind of motivational speeches and blah de blah. But actually, if you look at sport, I think sport is like, if you look at, say, it's all around these 1% things. And I think the sleep recovery, Team Sky, who were very successful in the cycling a number of years ago, like their cyclists were traveling with their own pillows from home because they wanted to get better sleep and better recovery and so on. So I think there is an evolution. And I think, even as I said, for me, it was kind of a eureka moment with Richard as well, in terms of how much emphasis he puts on actually enjoying life as well. I think it's something for people to really think about.
One of the other things you've mentioned in the past is the importance of journaling or planning or something along those lines. Tell me a little bit more about your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I think in terms of planning, I think, look, if you were driving tomorrow to Paris or somewhere, you'd now you might say you'd have a GPS, but in olden days you'd have a map, right? And it's like, you're clear on the vision, you're clear on the destination. I think, it's probably timely as we head into people probably, setting goals for 2024 and so on. But as you set those goals, you have the vision, but then you need that plan that will obviously help you achieve that vision. And then, working backwards from that vision as much as you possibly can within that plan, I think that plan will give you confidence to go and achieve your goals. I think if I equated in my tennis career, when I came out of college at LSU, I didn't perform as well as I would have liked. And it was because I was putting a lot of pressure on myself, and that every day I needed to, or every match I needed to win, and so on. Whereas actually, I worked with a sports psychologist, and he talked a lot around. We created a plan and said, like, okay, over the course of the year, this is what I need to do, or this over the course of the next 18, 24 months, and so on. And look, plans change and things happen. And there's a great quote from Mike Tyson, which was, everyone has a plan until you get punched in the face, which I think we've all been there in some sense.
Metaphorically punch in the face, one hopes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, metaphorically punched in the face. But we've all had, we all have tough times and things go wrong and so on. So, but I think if we come back to that plan and we keep evolving and changing and so on, I think it's very hard to say, hey, we're gonna do X or Y next year, and just that's it, and just kind of go for it. I think we need a structure and plan in place.
I mean, it's interesting too, and I love your analogy too. If you're going to Paris, you're going to check out the route beforehand. And in my mind, even if you're using GPS or something like that, there's going to be detours. There's going to be things that
Yeah.
come up, and every day in our life, we're faced with so many different choices. And in my mind, all I can hear is the GPS saying, rerouting, rerouting, and with the goal that you're still getting to that destination, but you're going to take a different path. And I think, you know, as you've shared your story throughout the course of this discussion, in my mind, I hear like these different points in your life where your GPS did say rerouting. I mean, you took a chance by picking up the phone and making a phone call, and look at, you know, where it's led you today versus kind of, if we use that sliding door mentality, if you hadn't made the call, you know, you'd be in a completely different place.
Yeah, no, I think it's very true. And I think, yeah, to follow on the kind of car analogy, I think like there's different, as you said, there's different routes there, you know. There's a slow road and there's a long way. And then there's maybe you, and back to kind of the earlier part of the conversation, maybe you take the slow road and you're completely on your own and you get there, but it takes a lot longer. Or, you know, maybe you ask for directions from someone and they tell you this, you know, this is the fast way to go and so on. And they help you. Maybe you have to take a stop. You know, burst a tire on the way and you're stalled for a long time, but the destination is still there. You're kind of making your way there, you know. So I think those kind of analogies, I think, work well. I think it's you've made me think more around that in terms of that GPS.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think we could do, and even like, you know, you pick up a hitchhiker and then there's someone else on your journey with you, or yeah, stopping and asking for direction. I mean, there's so many ways that we can look at that to recognize that in very few situations, I mean, it goes back to what you were talking about. You have to have a community, because let's say you do decide to go as fast and hard as possible, right? You don't put effort into recovery or rest. At some point during that trip, like, you're going to have engine problems and you're going to need someone who's going to be able to come in and provide support so you can get up and running again.
So I'm going to cut across a bit, even to follow on from that, even to relate it to the recharge and rest. If you set off and you drive and you don't take a break at all, you're going to crash potentially, right? Because you're tired, right? So you need to spend a night in a hotel. You need to look after yourself. You need to eat. You need to, you know, you have to take stops and take checks and stop for gas and all those types of things, you know. So, or maybe you have an electric car, who knows? But
no, well, either way, you're going to have to charge.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to have to charge.
It's time again. We need to take a quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
As the list of compliance challenges for businesses continues to grow, it's time to think about your payroll vendor as someone that can do more than just pay your employees. I'm Chris Clef, president of Paper Trails. We're a team of fun and local experts purveying convenient, high-tech payroll and compliance services across New England. Whether your business is struggling to stay compliant with an earned paid leave law, you're worrying about retirement savings programs, or you have questions about your state's paid family medical leave, Paper Trails has the team and tools necessary to allow you to handle the work while we handle the paperwork. To learn more about Paper Trails and how we can help your business, visit papertrails.com/HRPowerHour.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis, as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Tawny Alvarez from Verrill, and today our guest is James Klusky, former professional tennis player turned executive coach and founder of GiveLearn. And today we've been talking about embracing pressure. We've talked about the importance of having a community and about the people who go on this journey with us and the moments in which we're going to experience pressure and how to make sure that when we're in those situations that we don't experience burnout in some way. James, you know, you and I have talked in the past, and One of the things that you mentioned is, you know, having in your toolbox not just people, but also kind of some educational support as well. And it's one of the things that GiveLearn really focuses in on. If you were to kind of identify two of your favorite programs with GiveLearn recently, what would those be? And it doesn't have to be, you know, the whole entire topic, but kind of what elements are they setting forth for your clients?
Yeah, and no, I'm look, we've had some great programs, and just to kind of, I suppose, recap on GiveLearn. So we have a it's a full program from January to December, and businesses are giving GiveLearn to their employees, and as I said, we have companies across industries. But in terms of themes and topics and so on, I think two stand out for me at the moment. One would be we had Val Quinn, who was the she was the CEO of Coca-Cola Ireland and also the CEO of Costa Coffee in Europe. And she talks a lot around, she doesn't like the word work-life balance. She likes work-life integration. And I think as we work hybrid and you know the world of work has changed since COVID, I think a lot for a lot of people, and how like everything is integrated and how do we make sure it kind of works together. Is the concept that she talks a lot around. And then the second piece is, I suppose, a mentor of mine, a guy who I met through Richard Branson. So a guy called Kurt Long, who's a rocket scientist and entrepreneur who's scaled and grown a number of businesses, who's incredible entrepreneur. I actually asked him to do a session on GiveLearn on leadership, and he came back and said, James, I'd love to give a session. He's given a couple, but I'd love to talk about the topic of listening. And he called it listening, the greatest business asset you need to develop. And he gave the session to every new employee of his last company, and then obviously delivered it on GiveLearn as well. I thought that was fascinating. One of the things he said is, you know, how do we be present in a conversation? So when you're speaking to a client, or you're speaking to a direct report, or you're speaking to your boss, or whoever it is, for that time, how do you be present and actually listen to them, and not fall into the trap, which I do a lot of the times, which is, you know, thinking to speak next, thinking what you're going to say, as opposed to actually listening to the person. So, that's something that really stood out for me. So, yeah, very lucky with the range of people that we've had deliver the courses and classes.
Both of those topics sound extremely important and interesting. And to our listeners, to the people who have joined us today, thank you so much for spending the last hour with us. And James, thank you so much for being a guest today. I really appreciate your time. I've learned a lot during the course of our dialogue, and I hope other people have taken away different aspects in which they can better embrace pressure more generally. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Tanya.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, James. For everyone else, you've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at hrpowerhour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.